Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to another glorious coupling between the Empire podcast and the Pilot TV podcast in association with our pals at Disney Plus. I'm joined by Pilot Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I am very, very good. Minor headache, but otherwise, I'm okay.
Nothing you can't conquer. It'll be fine.
No, I will be totally. I'll be totally fine. And to keep the balance exactly at 1.5 persons from each pod, please welcome Pilot and Empire's James Dyer.
I'm straddling the divide. I'm sitting on the fence.
You are a colossus bestriding both podcasts like a colossus.
Like a colossus.
Like a colossus.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do you have a headache because you've been engaging in some bare knuckle boxing?
He's taken some blows to the head.
Yeah,
I have taken blows to the head. I have taken. Maybe that's one of the things we'll talk about in just 2 seconds. We'll talk about the last time you took a blow to the head. Because we are here to pull our brains, such as they are, into one giant mega brain of podcasts and look ahead to 1,000 Blows, which is the brand new Stephen Knight created show that is on Disney Plus right now. Epic. In scope and scale, as you might expect from Stephen Knight, who, of course, is the creator of Peaky Blinders. 1,000 Blows tells the story of a group of characters battling for survival in London's East End in the 1880s. And those characters include, but are not limited to, Hezekiah Mosco and Alec Monroe, played by Malachi Kirby, and Francis Lovehall, who arrive from Jamaica and find themselves thrust into the brutal world of bare-knuckle boxing. See, now James's reference makes sense.
Yes.
Mary Carr, the queen of the infamous all-female crime gang, the 48 Elephants, who's played by Aaron Doherty, and Henry Sugar Goodson, played by the great Stephen Graham. He's the undisputed kingpin of bare knuckle boxing, again, the reference, who is set upon a collision course with Hezekiah. And before we get into the show, you will be delighted to know that Kay here spoke to a whole bunch of those people. Who did you speak to, Kay?
I spoke to Stephen Graham and Malachi Kirby, and I also spoke to Stephen Knight.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay. All lucky. Right. Who do you want first? Because we're about to hear those interviews in case I wasn't clear.
Okay, let's hear from Stephen Knight first.
Stephen Knight first, the creator of Peaky Blinders, the creator of 1,000 Blows, and this will never fail to tickle me, the co-creator of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He is absolutely incredible. Here he is talking to Kay. Enjoy.
Stephen, so you must be inundated with offers and ideas being sent through to you. So what piqued your interest when you got Hannah's email?
Well, it was the idea is fantastic, but also it comes from Hannah and Stephen. So the, you know, in the knowledge that a major role will be played by Stephen is absolutely an incentive. So I dug a bit deeper into what I could find out about Hezekiah, an incredible, amazing story. The other motivation was I was, for a long time, wanted to tell the story of the 40 Elephants. You know, the fact that there was an all-female gang operating in the East End, well, in the West End, actually, and stealing from Harrods and Selfridges and doing confidence tricks was a story I just thought, I'd better do this quickly because somebody's going to do it. And when this offer came, the fact is that Mary Carr, who was the head of the 40 Elephants, and Hezekiah were both in London at the same time. And so I just imagined what would happen if they met.
Must be quite exciting to put those two historical figures together.
Yeah, exactly.
And did you write with Malachi and Erin in mind?
Very soon, yeah. I mean, the casting process started, I think, after the completion of episode 2. So it started then. So perhaps let's say I was writing 3 and 4. Let's say I'd finished 3 by the time we knew who it was. And then you go back a bit and you take a look at what you've written because you know you've got. And we got first choices every time, which is great. And so you get a sort of confidence. So going into series 2, you're very aware of who everyone is.
It's brilliant. That was my favourite part. When it got to the end of episode 6, it says to be continued. So we know we're going to get a next instalment.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. This is another great historical drama that you've written. Do you like the research process? Because obviously, I imagine it's quite intense.
I do tend to do it in a way that isn't, I don't know if it's normal or not, because I don't really know anybody else who does it. But I tend to try and use newspapers of the time, if possible, and court transcripts of trials and things, only because I feel that history books, because they're retrospective, tend to imagine that whatever actually happened was inevitable that, in other words, you know, this happened, therefore that had to happen. Whereas I think that the reality of it is more chaotic than that. So, you know, history doesn't like the idea that two contrary and opposite facts can be happening at the same time, but usually they are. You know, an example is the 40 elephants, where we're living in a time when women can't vote, women are not allowed to do all sorts of things. And here is an organisation of 40 women who are just bursting into Harrods and just taking whatever they want. So how do you reconcile that? Well, you don't have to, is the thought of mine, that you imagine the character and imagine, find out what they did, and then have to try and work out why they did it like that.
I love them. Audacious.
Oh, God. They get more and more
yeah,
audacious.
It's fantastic. You wrote the first two episodes and then you've kind of handed over the baton. Is that easy for you to do?
Yeah, it is when you've got good people. And it was immediately obvious that we did have a really good team of writers. So they were writing. I mean, I was working with them in the room and also, you know, working as the scripts develop. But it's great when you can just know that they're going to produce stuff that's fantastic, which they did.
Yeah. And so you're still hands-on then?
One hand on.
And I know you don't tend to go down to set often when the shows you write, but did you do it for this one?
I went a few times just because it was such an amazing set. I actually wanted to live there. Most period dramas, you're looking for, you know, a house in Leeds that looks right and a church in Bradford that looks right and a, you know, school in Birmingham. With this, it was all built. And so we had our own world. So you could have people walking down the street, turning left, turning right, walking in the pub, going up the stairs, walking to the bedroom, look out. It's all there. So I went to the set a bit more often than I normally would. But I tend not to go because what's the point of, unless you're there every day, then what's the point of being like Prince Charles visiting now and again? So now what do? You know, there's no point really.
Did you watch any of those fight scenes being filmed?
No, I didn't go to any of the fight scenes, and I'm still in awe of how they do. I mean, I write the story of the fight, which is the easy bit, and then they have to tell that story, and it's done with the actors and, you know, the best stunt people and fight coordinators there are. And how anybody didn't get hurt, I'll never know, because it looks as though they did.
It looks brutal. I was saying yesterday, like, both of them are so convincing. It wasn't like I was watching actors. It was like you're watching a brutal fight-to-the-death match. So
We should put a caption at the front saying no actors were hurt. In
you
the
definitely
making
should.
Of this show.
And dedication to the training as well.
Yeah. Oh, God, Stephen. I mean, he looks terrifying.
I'm so happy he said it, because he said he felt like, you know, it was like a British bulldog. And that's how I describe him, pure brawn.
Yeah.
But totally different types of fighting, which I liked as well. Fine. Like, can you tease something for season two? Is it done and dusted?
Yeah. I can't tell you anything about plot, just that the stakes get higher, the relationships get deeper, and the consequences get more and more serious. That's all.
Because I think what's really intriguing about Sugar's character is that he's not just this you can see him as a thuggish character because his behavior, but actually it's all because of his fight for survival.
Yes.
And he wants to maintain his, you know, his standing in the community, but also Mary.
Yes.
Something about Mary.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think Stephen is the best in the world at being scary and being intimidating, but you can just see, it doesn't really open the door to let you in, but somehow, you know, there's something else going on. And I think the best way to observe maybe anybody, but someone like that, is if they fall in love with someone, because then all bets are off in terms of behavior. Do you know what I mean? Things that they would never say or do to anyone else, they'll say, even sometimes in front of other people. You know, it gets that reckless. And that's the point with this story, is that he's in love with someone that isn't. I'm giving this away now.
No, I've seen it. My heart's already been broken.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the only time we see his vulnerability. Mary is his weak spot, so to speak. We should talk about Malachi's performance as well. There's such a, like, regal element to him and his performance, such a graceful, you know. How did you feel when you...
He absolutely captured the character, not the character necessarily that I wrote, but the character from history, because everything I read about Hezekiah, and there's not a lot, but everything I read, he was universally liked. So here's this man who beats people, bare knuckle. He's from Jamaica in a largely white community. Everybody really liked him. And exactly as you said, something regal, the impression you get from people observing him is that he was a gentleman and was quite gentle, as well as everything else. So the way that Malachi has captured that without it being on the page is incredible.
Okay, well, we will be watching A Thousand Blows, and we're very excited to watch it on Disney Plus.
Great.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot.
Okay, that was Stephen Knight talking about A Thousand Blows. And now here's another Stephen, Stephen Graham, who plays, of course, Henry Sugar Goodson, and Malachi Kirby, who plays Hezekiah Mosco. Again, talking to Kay. Enjoy.
Stephen, Malachi, nice to see you both. Stephen, when this first landed, this idea landed on yours and Hannah's desk, what was it about it that you thought, we need to tell this story, and I really want to play Sugar?
It was the fault. It got sent to us by Tom from Water and Power. One of their researchers had found this photograph, and I think they were looking into making like a period drama. And they'd found this photograph of a man called Hezekiah Mosco. And it was just, which we now have in our office, actually. We have that picture. We've got framed nicely, and it's in our office. And it was just, I've never seen, I'm completely honest, you know what I mean? And I've said this many a time today. We've both said this many a time today. But I've never seen an image of a black man in the 1800s in this country looking so regal, so dignified, full of grace, full of humility, and full of honor and pride. Do you know what I mean? We're used to seeing photographs of men and women of that ethnicity in places of servitude. And, you know, I've never seen anything like that. And it immediately made me think, wow, who is this man? What's his story for? And because it's a photograph and because it's real and it's true and it's authentic, it happened. It is a photograph from that time period. You kind of quickly flash your mind into, it's an image that lives and it exists. So, you know, look, we're having this conversation now, and at any moment the frame can be frozen, and it's kind of what happened in that moment, what's led to him being there at that particular moment in time in history. Where did he come from? How did he get there? So it just sends your head into a spiral, do you know what I mean, of all these many things. And then Hannah had this wonderful idea to get in touch with Steve Knight, because she was speaking to Julie, who's his assistant, and they were talking about me doing Peaky Blinders, and Hannah had built this relationship, and she went, I'm going to get Steve to write this. And I went, oh, don't beast, behave yourself, love. And she went, no, I promise you, he'll do this. This is the kind of thing he loves. And literally within 4 days, he came back saying, I really love the sound of this. Can we get together? Can we do a Zoom? And can we discuss the piece and the project?
Never underestimate Hannah. That's the motto there,
oh,
right?
Never. I never do. I never, ever, ever underestimate Hannah. Never.
And it's the dream team, obviously, with Stephen Knight as well. Yeah. And so just touching upon why, and what about Sugar, though?
Sugar, I just found him really fascinating and interesting. You know, we didn't know much about him. There was literally three sentences about his life. But I asked Steve, I said from the very beginning, I want to play a man who's kind of completely opposite from me. Do you know what I mean? I wear my hat on my sleeve. I'm kind of soppy and stuff. But I wanted to play this solid, grounded kind of man of gravitas who, you know, very few words, and also has a kind of stoic presence about him. Do you know what I mean? And a survivor and a fighter. I wanted to play that kind of role, that kind of archetypal men of bygones gone by, do you know what I mean, in many ways. And for that, myself, I really wanted to create this kind of life of a real, true, authentic person, which existed. But then we could really, you know, add some flavor to it and see what Steve come up with. And we worked on it. And it's one of my favorite characters I've ever played.
Yeah. No, he's great. And what about you? Because obviously, as I really like that point, he's very regal, Hezekiah. He's just like, he's very dignified. What drew you to the role, Malachi?
Honestly, I feel like, I don't know. I was basically, before I took the role, about 6 months before, I had got in touch with my agents. And I'd never done this before, by the way. This wasn't like a thing. And I'd said to them, because I had a clarity about what I wanted to do next. And there were four things that I told them at the start of the year. This would have been at the start of January 2022. I said that I really love to play a boxer. Bear in mind, I'd never even watched boxing. I don't know where that came from. But I'd really love to play a boxer. I'd really love to play someone who really existed based on a real person. I'd love to do a period drama. And I'd love to film it in London, because I just had this thing. I've been traveling for work a lot and I just wanted to be home. And 6 months later, my agent gets in touch and is like, I think we found something that might fit that category.
Is this real? It's like Kismet.
I know, yeah, exactly.
But here's the thing. I didn't know it was going to be all one job. That in my head, it was like several different things. Can we try and find something in this world? And he just packaged it all in 1,000 blows, and I'm reading it, and I'm not only just like, because he told me, I think we found it, so I'm reading it, I'm going, okay, he thinks that all of the stuff is in here, that doesn't mean it's going to be a good script, do you know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, let me read it though, and I'm just like blown away, like, the man's Jamaican, first of all, it's the first time I've ever got to portray someone from my same background. But he's not just Jamaican. He's written in such a beautiful way. And there's this world that I just automatically, like, it's just, I'm just turning the pages going, what's the rest of the story? And for me, what made me know that this was very special was that I didn't just want to be part of it. I wanted to see it happen, whether I was part of it or not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't about me getting the role. It was just, this thing just needs to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll support from here. Project. I'll support in, do you know what I mean? It just needs to happen. And so that's where I was like, yeah, if I get the chance to be involved in helping to make that come to pass, then amazing. But just make sure it happens because it's beautiful. That was at script stage. That was before I knew who else was going to be involved and casted. That was before I got on set and saw this incredible set that they've built and these costumes. And that was
the world that was created.
Yeah, it's a very special show. I don't say that lightly.
Mm.
The set is amazing. We'll come to that, but the set is incredible. But the job they've done on that. You said you haven't watched, you weren't particularly into boxing. We've got to talk about it because I have to say, as a like audience member, I didn't feel like I was watching two actors boxing. I just felt like I was watching a brutal match. And it felt very authentic. What was your experience of boxing beforehand? You said probably none for you.
None.
Stephen, have you been in the ring before?
I did a little bit as a kid. I remember kind of one summer holidays, which I really, with Kirby Sports Centre. I went and I did a bit of boxing when I was a kid. In the gym up there, which was great. But I've always been interested in boxing. I'm an avid fan of boxing. I love boxing. And for me, it was the opportunity because I knew I had a long period of time before. Once we got the green light from Disney, do you know what I mean? I knew I had a really good bit of time to get in shape. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to really kind of physically challenge myself. And change my stature and change my physique, basically. Do you know what I mean? And it was hard work. It was like training 5 times a week. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my God.
2 days off, gym every day, for 5 days, and boxing as well, 3-4 times through the week, and lots of food, eating properly, healthily, but eating lots and lots of food throughout the day, loads of protein, creatine.
That sounds fun.
You say that, but it's not because you can only eat so much chicken and broccoli and fish and rice and good carbs and wholemeal cobs.
It's not
and
the fun stuff.
It's not like burgers and chips.
You know,
it's not curry rice and sausage. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? It's not that. It's not from the chippy. It's none of that kind of stuff. It's
that does feel like all, a chore now.
It is, and it's all weighed out, and you know, even dishes that you, But it was tough, you know. But it was great. I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
When we were training, we'd film our sessions so that we could go back and actually practice it. Do you know what I mean? Because we didn't always have the time to be together.
It was the stunt choreographer and the fight coordinator. So each fight was to try and make it look as natural as possible. It's choreographed to the finest detail. Do you know what I mean? Literally to where you put your feet. So it's dance. It's a dance flowing movement, basically. And we, you know, each kind of blow is like 1, 2, 3. So we did all of that and we worked on the fight together. We brought both of our styles of the two characters to that as well. And we worked with the fight coordinator and they videoed it. And then we'd take it home and, you watch it. I was lucky I got Art Alfie to do it with me. So I worked on my fights with Art Alfie.
But yeah, they've got very different styles of fighting, haven't they, both of them? So with your character, it's more sort of like, I felt like it was measured, you know, as you say, dancing around the ring, floating like a butterfly. Whereas Sugar, it just feels, oh, mate, he just goes in there. He's going in almost to kill. He just wants to let...
Well, he will win by any means necessary.
Yeah. Biting included.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, do you know what I mean? And for me, personally, I worked on that fight style and that technique with my boxing trainer, Graham. And it was a mixture of Mike Tyson, because I'm only, you know, my stature, I'm 5'5½, Alfie, not 5'4". I love him to bits, though. I love him. And Grace, you're the same. Always going on about me being small, do you know what I mean? So
small but mighty.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Thank you, Jake. Thank you. Thank you, Mighty Mouse. So what we were trying to do was build that kind of bulldog, do you know what I mean? So we went for that combination between Mike Tyson and a great bare knuckle fighter called Lenny McLean, who was brutal. So we tried to combine both of their styles together, and that's kind of what we came up with.
I'm happy you said that. In my mind, I was like, he is like a bulldog, pure muscle and just like in like a...
And it was a lot of work on traps and stuff, do you know what I mean? And then obviously there's the physical element, because I never had... And it's how you... move your body as an actor in many ways, you know what I mean? But I used to lift up like that, didn't I, every time? So we both have our own way of getting into the character and stuff, do you know what I mean? But you go away, you have a little minute and turn over and boom, 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 and then you'd get ready and then you'd walk. And so you create that kind of bigger style, do you know what I mean?
It must make you feel good as well when you walk, do you know what I mean? Because you're kind of like living that character, because they're physically impressive.
Yeah.
The way you must change how you walk and stuff. What was it like walking into the ring for the first time with all that supporting cast around you, shouting names? The adrenaline must have been intense.
Even when you say it, like it was so impactful for me anyway, that when you say it, it's like I'm taken right back there. The moment is so rich. I don't know if I'll ever forget it. Like the first moment we walk into that ring and literally...
But you had Danny.
Yeah.
You had Danny as well.
Man, come on. Like,
remember.
Yeah, literally, like the energy that every single person brings into that room. Like, I don't think we needed, like, there was such a, it felt like there was like, you know, when you put like smoke in the ring or whatever, like it felt like that, but there wasn't any of that. All of that smoke was coming from us. Everyone's energy, just, there was such a passion in that room before the fight started that was like, okay, we're here. Like whatever happens, something's going to happen. That, do you know what I mean? Like there was a substance before the cameras were rolling.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It wasn't on action. Okay, now let's start. It was before that. There was an energy in the room. And so you're coming into that. And then there's action on top of that. Do you know what I mean? You can't fake that.
Danny and Tom on the sidelines as well.
Of course, yeah, who were fantastic. Yeah. And the supporting cast were, as Mala said, they were amazing. Do you know what I mean? I think we had something between 160 and 180 extras in that small space, but it was packed out, wasn't it? And they were, you know, we were there for a whole week. And it was grueling, wasn't it? It was hard. It was tough. It's like 8 a.m. So, you know, we'd do a full day shoot when we were there for like 5 days, I think, in that space. Mm. And they were absolutely bang on every single time, weren't they?
Yeah, never dropped energy.
Never dropped energy.
Or passion or care. It felt like they genuinely were excited to be there.
Yeah, you can't, invested in the fight.
Yeah, like they actually cared. That they wanted to be there. You can't fake that. Do you know what I mean? Off camera, on camera, like everyone was like, I remember there was essays that were literally just like after the fight, it was like, yeah, go on, no, just go and try. Like they were proper involved and invested in the show, you know? And you can't pay for that.
It was really choreographed, you say, but was there any room for spontaneity or you just can't do it?
Not within them respects, no.
Right.
No, not within
them.
Certain moments when I think we may have tweaked little bits while we were there, but you have to be so precise because, you know, look, you're not going to... There's an element of pulling your punches to an extent, but you also want to throw it and make it look like it's really connected through. Yeah. So it took us a long time, months before we actually shot it, to really fine tune that and have that in a great place. And then when we're there on the day, the energy and the atmosphere really carry, you know, you get carried away with it and it helps you elevate it to another level. But it's so meticulous and it has to be such, the timing has to be perfect. Otherwise you'll catch someone. Do you know what I mean?
All right. That was Stephen Graham and Malachi Kirby. Shall we get into 1,000 blows?
A blow by a thousand blow account.
How long do you have? Do you have room for 1,000 blows? Because this is a really, really interesting show. Should we start with Stephen Knight, who is just this fascinating figure to me? Yes, the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire thing is just wild. But he is, I would say, one of our best writers. He's an incredibly prolific writer, an incredibly successful writer. He just seems to have this never-ending flow of new scripts and new shows and new characters. Where does 1,000 Blows? Does it feel very much like a Stephen Knight show to you?
The thing with Stephen Knight is he has such a kind of diverse writing portfolio. It's almost hard to pin down what makes a Stephen Knight show because he can do things as varied as Peaky Blinders. He can do things like C. He can do Spencer. Like, he does so many different things and tonally they can be very different. This, though, weirdly, I think is a very Stephen Knight show because it has that similarity of tone and kind of setting as Peaky Blinders in that, you know, it takes place in sort of London, well, in this case, London, not Birmingham, but sort of streets of working class areas, and it takes these sort of underworld characters and makes them larger than life figures, whether it be the boxers, whether it be the 40 elephants. And so he turns these sort of like petty criminals essentially into rock stars. So yeah, this is, it's a very Stephen Knight joint, as it were.
Lots of disparate characters interweaving their way in and out of this world, which is a very, very fully realized world, I have to say, as well, in this show. You can really, really feel, it feels like you're being transported back to the East End of the 1880s, Kay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we should talk about the set. It's extraordinary. I think they filmed in Mortlake in a back lot. And as you say, it feels like you are walking into Victorian London. And I have to say, it's pretty grim and grimy. This is, I think, set in Wapping specifically. It feels so authentic. I mean, I think the production design has done a great job, and the, you know, hair and makeup, costume, etc. It's brilliant.
And can I just say, points as well for them not rocking up at the Old Royal Naval College, which is just down the road from where I live in Greenwich, and is, I think, possibly the most used filming location ever, because it's so chameleonic. It can be 1880s East End London, it can be Glasgow, it can be futuristic, it can be all kinds of things. And so just the other day I was walking through it and there was a TV show filming there. There's always going to be something, and they didn't do it, at least not yet. The final episode might be set entirely
exclusively
there. College. But it's great, and it speaks to the ambition of this show. Like I say, it's epic in scope and scale. It's telling a huge story here against a huge backdrop, Jimbo.
Yeah, well, two stories, really, because you've got the Hezekiah story when he sort of comes, as you mentioned, from Jamaica with his friend Alec and, you know, wants to become a lion tamer. He wants to work with animals, and he gets sucked into this world of bare-knuckle boxing, which is obviously not what he signed up for. And then kind of running parallel to that is Erin Doherty's storyline, as sort of she's the queen of the 40 elephants, and they're this essentially all-female, historical, all-female gang that ran around the East End for
these
about
are real,
100 years.
Real people.
They had a real presence there. And actually, if you know the history of the 40 elephants, which of course I absolutely don't, but I did look it up on Wikipedia, and like there's a character who drops in to the 40 elephants in this show in an early episode, and she becomes a very iconic character historically in that gang. So I'm really interested to see how that plays out in this series. But it's what's really interesting there is their relationship with the sort of the matriarch, who's essentially Mary's mother, played by Susan Lynch, and how she keeps them under her thumb, and also how they're not content with picking pockets, with ripping off department stores. They have grander ambitions. Mary wants to really sort of conquer the world, and she wants to do something big. She wants one big heist, which of course absolutely won't go wrong. But I thought that was a really interesting sort of thread running through this. What I found really interesting was the idea of the name, like the 40 elephants. Where did that come from? And I did a little bit digging on this, and there seems to be a split on this. It's partly because they were based around Elephant and Castle. That's perhaps it. And the other theory is that they break into department stores, they'd steal all the clothes and the jewelry, and they'd go out often wearing the clothes, looking like elephants with like multiple layers of clothes on them. That genuinely, I read that on the internet, and it must
think
be true.
Pulling your leg.
I think it's more likely the Elephant and Castle story, personally. I'm just saying that.
They say an elephant never forgets. I wish James had forgotten that last one.
Well, you know.
I'm not so sure. Although that is something we see very early on in the show, their talent for subterfuge.
That's right.
And it's going to be really interesting watching the way that Mary Carr, who is played brilliantly by Erin Doherty, who is another one of those actors who's been on the cusp of something great for a long, long time, terrific in last year's Reawakening, for example. And, you know, this is a role that she just eats up. She dominates pretty much every scene that she's in. It's going to be fascinating watching Mary Carr cross paths and develop a friendship, a tentative friendship, I guess, with Hezekiah, played, of course, by Malachi Kirby. And it's going to be really, really fascinating because they're both, in the same way, doing the same thing. Also, the Mr. Lau character, played by Jason Tobin in this, they're all people who are trying to, in different ways, self-improve. They're all trying to better themselves. It's just how they go about it. That maybe slightly differs. But there's a moment in the first episode where Mary Carr catches someone in the act of, how should we say, pilfering from her, and she has banknotes that she's emblazoned with a heart, so she can tell that it's hers. And she says, "Little hearts I put on every note I steal to signify my love for improvement." which I thought was a very, very nice way of saying it. And later on, there's a line where Hezekiah says, everyone have him own destiny in his hands. So the theme of the show is about that thing. This theme of the show is that self-improvement and social climbing in a way. And Hezekiah comes here from Jamaica with dreams in his head of becoming a lion tamer. And again, not to get into it or give things away, but very, very quickly, he becomes disabused of that notion and goes about improving his situation in a very, very different way. But that's clearly, I think, on Stephen Knight's mind.
Mm. It's social climbing as well, isn't it? Because part of this is that kind of division of when boxing was evolving from traditional bare-knuckle pugilism to kind of Queensbury rules as we know it, like glove gentleman's boxing. So it's going from like East End dives to like a gentleman's sport. And part of what's happening here is kind of they're straddling those two worlds. So Stephen Graham's character is a very old school guy. He's all about the bare knuckles. And then it's like, can they break into sort of gentleman's boxing, which is a step up in society as well. They're sort of running in very different circles. And I think that's an interesting divide in this as well.
I think what's really interesting is that Stephen Graham's character, obviously...
Too many Stevens.
Yeah, I know. Stevie G.
Come on now. He's from Liverpool, but there's only one Stevie G from Liverpool.
He grew up in the workhouse and he's fought really hard to be where he is, as you say, the kingpin of Wapping, owning the last bare-knuckle pub. Yeah. And he really, you know, he lords it up and he's very proud of that, his roots and the bare-knuckle fighting. However, what's interesting is that while his brother wants to, you know, take that further and go into the glove boxing, as you say, and the gentrification of it.
Treacle,
Goodson. He absolutely refuses. He's happy to be a big fish in a small pond. He doesn't want to branch out and go up west. He won't even entertain that.
Mm. I think Stephen Graham's terrific in this. He has an amazing character introduction in the first episode where the camera dances around him a little bit and plays this, you know, little game of we know it's Stephen Graham, you know it's Stephen Graham, but we're gonna take our sweet time revealing that it's Stephen Graham.
Yeah.
And he's just terrific.
Well, it makes him into a myth, and I think that's brilliant. He becomes this larger than life sort of folklore, sort of like anti-hero, because he runs this area and he extends his protection over Mary and the 40 Thieves, or 40 Elephants. They're often known as the 40 Thieves, in fact. They went by both. Also, he is a man with, I think it's fairly safe to say, anger management issues. And he works those out in the ring. And when he comes up against Hezekiah, it really brings out the worst in him. Mm-hmm. And he is properly terrifying.
Also, such different styles of boxing. Like, I'm not a boxing expert, but even I can tell, you know, like, you've got Stephen Graham there, who is like a, as he's described in my interview, he's like a bulldog, pure muscle, goes in to kill, will win any way possible. You know, like he plays dirty. He's not opposed to a bit of scratching, biting, etc.
Who isn't?
You know, we've all been there.
There's a whole point. You have gloves on. You can't scratch someone.
It's just a Saturday night.
Unless, of course, you take a knife and you cut into your gloves and then you have a kind of serrated edge in your gloves and then you can...
Come
jam
on,
people.
That's
with
not
it.
Gentlemanly.
No Queensbury rules there. That's for sure.
But with Hezekiah, it's just like it's completely different style. You know, he's very graceful. He dances around the ring. It's almost balletic. It's a really different approach.
The first thing I saw from the show was a still. It was a production still, a very early one, of Stephen Graham in the boxing ring. You know, stripped to the waist, looking pumped. Tattoos all over him as well, screaming in triumph / rage. It's hard to tell with sugar. It could be both the same. I was like, oh, this is interesting. And like loads of extras all around. I was like, well, this is a show to keep an eye on. And that's before I was aware there was a Stephen Knight show. And also Nick Murphy's involved as well. And those three have worked together in the past. They did the adaptation of A Christmas Carol a few years ago, with Guy Pearce as Scrooge, and Stephen Graham played Jacob Marley. And they're just really, really good together. And Stephen Graham and Nick Murphy have also worked together on the excellent Save Me. Do you remember that show?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a great show. And so they have this working relationship. They have this shorthand. And Nick Murphy was lead director along with Tinge Krishnan on the first two episodes, so sets the tone and the style of the show. And they just work together so well. I'd like to keep the two Stevens, Knight and Graham and Nick Murphy, and just make them work together for the rest of their lives. whether or not it pleased anyone else, as long as it pleases me, I'm happy enough.
Yes. No, they are a great combo. Also, we should say that Ashley Walters directs a couple of episodes of the series as well, which is great, you know.
Great lineup of directors here as well. Absolutely. What did we make of the cast, though? Because it's just you've got this murderer's row. None of them are actual murderers of incredible talent. You have Aaron Doherty, you have Malachi Kirby, you have Danny Mays showing up as well as the early 1880s version of the Hype Man.
Yeah.
You know, basically, let's get ready to rumble.
The original MC.
Yeah, pretty much. You have Big Tom Davis in this as well. It's just a fantastic cast.
Unrecognizable at first, Tom, I thought.
With hair.
Yeah. I had to double take. I was like, wait, is that Big Tom D? Yeah, it is. I thought he was great in that.
Yeah.
I tell you who I was most impressed by. I mean, it's a great ensemble cast, but Malachi Kirby, I thought, was excellent because I haven't really seen any of his work before, but I think he gives such a soulful performance in this. You know, it's this kind of like outsider coming to London with these grand ambitions, which are scuppered. How he faces the bigotry and racism that he encounters. And just like, I think, you know, you just see everything in his eyes, whether it's the optimism when he first arrives, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, thinking the streets will be paved with gold, to the trauma he went through in Jamaica. You just see it all there.
Yeah.
Just an incredible performer. He's magnetic. You can't take your eyes off him.
Yeah, he works with Stephen Graham in Boiling Point, you know, Philip Barantini. It's the film, not the TV version of it.
Yeah,
but they work together on that. He's very, very good. I guess people know him most from small acts and maybe Roots as well.
Okay,
perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. He's certainly someone who's been kind of plugging away for a long, long time, and this is his big breakthrough. And he's absolutely terrific in it, I have to say. And likewise, Aaron Doherty, who's just got this. She's really, really fascinating in this because she's got this combination of just downright terrifying chilliness. There's a moment earlier on where she's confronting someone, the person who stole from her, and she's absolutely terrifying in that. But there is a wiliness there as well, or there is a softness as well. You can see how that character is going to grow and develop over the next few episodes. She's not just going to be the queen pin of crime.
No, although you would not mess with her.
Would not mess with her.
Don't get on the wrong side
at
of her.
All. Yeah. No, absolutely not.
She plays chess with people. I love that description of her, and it's so true. Like, she's formidable and terrifying, and you can see why, but she's very protective of her own. So you can see why those, the faulty elephants are so loyal to her.
Yeah.
And they've like, you know, it's a dysfunctional family, but they have this strong bond. And as you say, they like have these grand ambitions of like elevating their status. They, you know, I think she says something like, why steal from the bottom when we can steal from the top?
Yes.
Which I loved as well. And she's a very impressive character. And crucially, she is Sugar Goodson's own, you know, Achilles heel.
Okay.
The only vulnerability we see in him really is when Mary comes onto the scene, because he clearly, you know, loves her and, you know, has aspirations of potentially being with her. But then Hezekiah comes on the scene.
Uh-oh.
And then you get the motivation. Why does he want to bring him in the ring and kill him?
Yeah.
Well, Mary Carr's your answer.
But that's exactly right, isn't it? There is, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, there is a fight early on, which doesn't go exactly as planned. But I don't think it's what happens in the ring that ultimately sets him off. It's what happens outside of the ring that maybe proves more provocative.
Oh, something to look forward to. Look forward to indeed. And it's going to be, I'm guessing, quite a lot of bare knuckle boxing in this. Let's come back to the question we teased right at the beginning, just before we went to the interviews. What's the biggest blow you've ever received? And have you ever bare knuckle boxed?
No, but I was thinking about it because we're two, not rival podcasts, sister podcasts. I'd be interested in a pilot empire fight
for charity. Who would we pick? Who would be our respective champions?
Well, I think you've got your answer here.
Yeah, so Kay
the Sparrow
is boxing.
Ribeiro.
I feel like the only person who could go toe-to-toe with Kay would be Helen. So,
Because I could never hit.
She
could never hit a woman.
Apart. Yeah, No, she'd go straight through.
Yeah, and also because I'm terrified of Kay.
Tissue paper.
Let's be honest, I'm terrified of Helen as well. So
we're very much the Sugar Goodson, Treacle Goodson of this scenario. Yeah. Helen and I think so.
Step into the sugar bowl. I can't have too much sugar in one day. Otherwise, I'll just keel over and die. No, I don't know, because obviously you'd have to step aside, right? You know, as a straddler.
Yes, I would have Colossus. To referee as a neutral party.
Oh, you're not neutral. You would go, oh, look at that. I think Pilot just won.
Yes.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. You'd be our hype man.
Given that the couple of times where we have done battle in the past have been in quizzes on the in the public forum, and James has,
won fair and square.
You won nothing, my friend.
You sound like Sugar Goodson right now, disputing everything.
You were sent packing both times, including, might I add, in a TV quiz. Which was embarrassing for you.
I mean, look, I wasn't on a team, so I disavow anything that happened.
That was one of my proudest moments. He's going, name all the Doctor Who's, and my hand immediately went up.
Shameful.
And I just reeled them off.
That was impressive work.
Where was Boyd when you need him?
He was there.
The Doctor Who fan,
he
really?
He was there, yeah.
He's let us down.
But he was struggling. Never bring a Boyd to a gunfight.
Yeah. I think we'd be better off with bare knuckle boxing, to be honest with you. One of us would be, I mean, would you go full Graham? Because, like, didn't he go full, like, it was all broccoli, eggs, rice, and chicken, wasn't it? That was his whole thing. And he's really bulked up for this. Like, it's really
intense
impressive.
Training, yeah. Months and months of training.
I couldn't do that. I don't have the time. I joined a gym 6 months ago. I haven't been. I've been paying £25 a month to not go to the gym. For the last 6 months.
Do you want to just set up a direct debit to either James or me, and we will receive the 25 and you don't have to do anything?
It's like the same thing, but I just couldn't do it. Like, even if they cast me tomorrow as the new Hulk and they went, okay, Chris, we can't afford any CG, you're going to have to do it yourself. I mean, here's a program to train. I couldn't do it. Even if they said, here's 10 squillion pounds, which I believe is the going rate to play the Hulk.
Yes.
I couldn't do it. I won't do it.
I would do it for 10 squillion.
Yeah, so would I. I think this is what happened, actually. I don't think Stephen Graham actually had to go to the gym. I think he joined a gym and that was enough to make him look like that. Just being a member naturally made him swell to massive proportions. Yes, I think that's exactly how it worked. But it's interesting listening to him talk about this. Like, he was saying that he based his character on a little bit on Mike Tyson, a little bit on Lenny McLean. But he said for the physicality of the role, his inspiration was Bob Hoskins.
You can see that. He's got that short, squat, powerhouse.
That. Yeah.
You get the feeling, you know, he could go off at any second.
Mm. Yeah, it's the volatility. But as you say, it's because Stephen Graham isn't a massively tall man. But his presence in this show is enormous. And again, it comes down to how he carries himself. It's the physicality. Mm. And you really sort of, it radiates from him, that kind of menace.
And it's one of those great things I was talking about his introduction earlier on. And, you know, in the first episode, he's constantly being talked about. So the first we see Treacle first, who's played by James Nelson Joyce. And we see Treacle, we see him get in the ring, we see him knock 7 bells out of a lot of people in that ring. But really the main event is Sugar. Because Sugar beats Treacle, right?
All the time.
I think.
Depends on what kind of cake you're making, really, doesn't it?
Either way, pretty sweet.
I know from a very, very recent experience that Treacle is very hard to obtain in the Southeast London area. And I had to go to 9 different shops to find some Treacle.
Oh, you should have headed to Wapping.
Yeah.
I should have headed to Wapping, where there was Sugar and Treacle in plentiful supply. But that build up, you know, it's one of those things where, like, everyone talks about in whispered tones. Oh my God, Sugar, you won't believe Sugar. He'll knock your head off right off your body. And then, of course, we get to see Stephen Graham, who's in his 50s.
Yes, he is.
And is looking pretty good.
Mm. I love the fact that in that first fight, he headbutts a guy's punch. Instead of blocking it, he just nuts him in the fist.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in terms of character introductions, there's a statement of intent that tells you pretty much everything you need to know about that character.
I wonder if that was improvised.
he just did it.
So you've never been in a fight? You've never been in a bare knuckle fight? Or any fight?
Okay, the truth of it is...
Oh, here we go, here we go.
No, I haven't. I am smaller stature, some say. But as I said to Stephen Graham, small but mighty, both of us, me and him. And I've never actually been in a fight, but in my head, because I feel like I'm bigger than I am. So often in my head, I will go through scenarios where, you know, I maybe participate and obviously am formidable in the ring, but...
What's your tactic in your head? Because you're small.
I would be like Sugar. I'm going to be honest. I would be like Sugar. By any means possible, I would win. Yes.
Okay. All right. So are you nipping in around people's heels?
Yeah, I'm fast.
You're fast?
I'm a perfect combo of Hezekiah and Sugar. So I'll be fast, but then I would do what was necessary.
Wow.
Okay. So come and have a go if you fancy it. Yeah.
So you're going for people's legs, you're going for their ankles.
Yeah. And I think my name would be The Sparrow.
The Sparrow.
Okay.
Yeah. K. The Sparrow Ribeiro.
Yeah, sure.
You're not going along the sugar and treacle road here?
No.
Beat
my own path.
Golden syrup. Can I interest you in golden syrup?
Maple K.
Maybe I need to rethink the name. No, I'm pretty confident with Sparrow because people would underestimate me. They just saw on those posters, as you discussed, you know, the posters are everywhere, bigging up sugar with me. It'd be the Sparrow. Everyone would underestimate me, right? They'd come and they'd think, oh, God, this is going to be a quick match.
It's going to be, wouldn't. Yeah, it's going to rip the sparrow's head off. James Canderell Dyer.
Oh, God. Yeah, a bit. They call me Big Stevia.
That's annoyingly good.
I think were I to be in a fight, it would look a lot like
Stevia Graham.
The Daniel Cleaver and Mark Darcy fight in Bridget Jones's Diary.
See, I know for a fact that you have trained in the ancient arts of the martial.
Yes, I played an awful lot of Yaya Kung Fu on the ZX Spectrum.
But you have,
ages.
Haven't you? Like you've trained. You've done training
from Reese K. It's kind of leather.
Get out.
I have in my youth. In my youth, I quite enjoyed a bit of martial artistry. But having said that, like while I enjoyed doing that stuff, I've never ever voluntarily got into a ring and encourage someone to lamp me in the head.
No, I could never do that. I could never do that. I have had fights before, though.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in school, really.
When you were at school, did you never get like all head up and temperatures were running high? And
yes, but I use my words. They were more powerful in the distance, right? A cutting few phrases would quickly end.
Your classmates soon knew not to tangle with a sparrow.
Yeah.
It was like a rap battle.
Yeah.
Kay would cut them down to size.
Were you scrappy then?
I was scrappy.
Scrappy,
I was pugnacious. Yeah. I was.
I call him the pug.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's your Chris, fighting name.
Chris the Pug. I wasn't very good, but you know, if someone started something, I would make sure that they finished it.
Yes. I think we all need animal fighting names, so you need to rethink yours.
Chris would repeatedly hit their fist with his face. Not show him.
Just run onto it. I'm winning. It's not how it works, Chris.
So Stephen Graham can get away with that. You can't.
No.
I was very much like you know, Joe Pesci and Goodfellas. they modeled him on me, but he had more of a success rate than I did. If someone came at me at school, I would, you know, I was initially quick with my fists, and then I realized that you do not go down that path, Kay.
And then you got tired quickly.
I got very tired because look at the size of me. I'm very small. I don't have very. I've got a wiry strength, but that's about it. It's a very thin wire, and then you just realize. Is that, you know, violence, there's no place for violence, right? So,
listen,
you know.
Jokes aside, I don't watch boxing, so I can't. It's the punches to the head. I can't bear it. Like, even the only time.
It's kind of the point of the game.
No, body blows. That's it. It should just be body blows.
But yeah, body blows are just as bad as blows to the head.
Yeah, but less
if you get
brain
a
trauma.
Kidney punch or a punch right to the chest.
I'm
you know,
okay
there's
with
a
that.
Reason why you're not allowed to punch below a certain level. It's why boxers have.
Below the belt always.
Have high waistage. They're not doing a Simon Cowell tribute act. It's to protect their extremities.
Do you think that would be the way to win at boxing? If you've got a pair of boxing shorts, but with a really big waistband that came right up past your nipples, and then they wouldn't be able to punch you anywhere because it would all be below the belt.
Well, no, you'd have to have one above your eyes.
That would just be weird.
And they could only punch like this small.
They could hit your forehead. And
it's
that's
a small
it.
Bit of real estate that they could punch, and good luck with that. And then you'd have to have two holes in the waistband of the shorts cut out so you could see through them.
It's got weird.
Because otherwise, you have no peripheral vision whatsoever in your giant mega shorts.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a look.
We've
for
just
sure.
redefined boxing.
I think we have. I think we've solved it.
That's the. Do you know what? We need to sell this into Stephen Knight. This is the third series for him.
1,001 blows.
This new kind of boxing we've just invented. Yeah.
Yeah. No blows.
Low blows.
You can't. Well, the lowest blow is the highest blow.
High low blow.
A high low blow.
Listen, I'm into it. I mean, can we trademark it?
We can trademark it. We can absolutely trademark it. I expect to be here discussing this, the 6-part limited edition series, the high-low blow, next year. But anyway, let's get back to talking about 1,000 blows, shall we? Kay, would you be a member of the 40 Elephants?
Oh my God, 100%.
Oh, queen of
yes,
the elephants.
Yes, I would vote. I mean, I would bow down to Mary. I don't know if I could take her on. I'm the sparrow is small, but I don't know if I could take on Mary Carr. But yeah, absolutely. Mm. Do you know what I loved? I loved that element of the story, like this powerful group of women who will do anything to change their circumstances. And I would love to be in the 40 elephants. I don't know what the initiation process is like, but I'd be up for trying. I think, you know, inspiring. The first scenes that we see is them pulling off some epic pickpocketing.
Audacious.
Yes.
And some really good pickpocketing.
Mm. And listen, if you were impressed by that, just wait to see the audacious heists that are to come. Because they have bold ambitions.
So it's not just Erin Doherty. It's not just Mary Carr. There are other people in this group.
Yes, including Hannah Walters, who we should mention is, of course, Stephen Graham's wife, but she's an exec producer on this. She stars in this as Eliza, mm-hmm. who is a member of the 40 Elephants, and she's very close to Mary. They have a close bond, but we're going to see that that is tested later on in the series. She's very protective of the group, and when things maybe start to go a bit wrong, she's keen to protect all the women involved.
Oh, that's exciting. That is exciting. The 40 Elephants ran for a long, long time. So it wasn't just the 1880s. They operated into the 20th century.
Yes, they did.
As well. They could still be operating now. Check your wallet. Check your pockets. Mine's gone too. Okay.
Just me. That's just me. That's not the 40 Elephants.
My wallet's empty. No, that's it. I work for Empire. wondered why that was the case, but suddenly realised, you know what? That's perfectly normal.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up. What is the one thing that you want people to take away when they're going in to see A Thousand Blows? You're sitting down to watch the first episode of A Thousand Blows. What should they look out for? What should they keep an eye out for?
I think everyone should channel their inner Stephen Graham. I think the next time someone comes up to punch you, just nut them in the fist. And bear in mind that Graham, in this at least, Graham is crackers.
Oh my God. He's had that in his back pocket. I wish, well, I wish the 40 Elephants gang
you
had nicked that, but no.
On a cracker.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good. Are Graham crackers even a thing over here?
Probably not. No,
it's a very good thing. But yeah, well done. But but of course, that's dangerous because the modern method of greeting is the fist bump. So if James sees a fist bump, he'll just headbutt someone's fist.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll become a term of endearment, like a method of greeting people.
Yeah, like in the pandemic when you bumped elbows. It'll just be like fist to face.
Okay. But that's what you want people to take away from A Thousand Blows.
Sure, why
never
not?
To approach you lest you headbutt their fist.
Yeah, basically.
All right,
that,
okay. Yeah. Okay, what are you going to take from it?
That James needs to wear a helmet going out of it. Other than that, this is an epic period drama. If you love the work of Stephen Knight, definitely tune in. But tune in for the camaraderie of these women, the 40 mm-hmm. Elephants. And even if you're a bit nervy around boxing, please tune in because it's so artfully done. It's beautifully
choreographed. It's really well shot.
And just like you feel like you're there. You feel like it is a box. You don't think you're watching two actors box, pretending to box. You feel like you're actually in a match with all those people, those supporting cast. It's
great
epic.
Foley work. You can really, you can hear the sound of bare knuckles hitting skin, which is obviously very, very different from a glove hitting skin. And it's great. Obviously, there's so many great boxing scenes in movies and TV. But you start thinking about your Rockies and you start thinking about your Creeds and your Raging Bulls and the fight choreography here, because boxing plays such a huge part and runs through all the episodes, is absolutely up to snuff. I would say take away from it just the unfolding intricacy of the performances and the characters and the way that they interlace and grow and develop in unexpected ways is going to ensnare you. And it's the shooting style of the show as well immerses you in this world. This isn't a very pretty version of London in the 1880s. This is a dense, horrible London. You can almost smell it. It wouldn't smell particularly nice, but it is really, really atmospheric and appealing. And so check it out for that. Anyway, that is it for our Thousand Blows preview special, another collab between Empire and Pilot. Of course, A Thousand Blows is out right now on Disney+. So why not check it out? Tell them Empire/Pilot sent you. On that note, it is time to say goodbye to my two colleagues of such lethal cunning. It's been another successful co-piloting job, wouldn't you say, Kay?
Yes, although going forward, I'll only respond to the name The Sparrow. But yes.
Sorry, it's goodbye from The Sparrow.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Big Stevia.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from me, The Pug. Thanks so much for listening. Pilot out.